Hello everyone and welcome back to Patient's Perspective. This is our third and final episode that will cover clinical trials, and I'm joined again with the lovely Dr. Liz Walder and her million and one PhDs and her wealth of knowledge about clinical trials. Hello Liz.
Hi Brooke.
So this episode we're going to be covering what people should expect to happen during the actual treatment of a clinical trial and what comes after. So Liz, what should people expect to happen?
Okay, so if you take part in a clinical trial, once you've passed the screening process and you are allocated your treatment group, you will then be asked to take part in a number of tests and procedures and be asked to attend a number of appointments. Sometimes these are at the hospital, sometimes they can be via a phone call, and sometimes there are things that you will be asked to do at home as well.
So you mentioned tests and scans before. What kind of tests and scans would people be asked to have?
Okay, so some of these tests you may have had during the screening process, but there are some ones that are usually used. For example, a physical examination. And this is just where your doctor will check your general health. An ECG, and this is used to monitor your heart rate and check for any heart abnormalities. It's a pretty painless procedure, so nothing to worry about. You'd also have potentially a CT or an MRI scan, and these use computers to generate images of the inside of your body, and they look at basically the condition of your disease, so what level of disease you have, but also look at the treatment effect and whether it's working or not. And the other one, I guess, would maybe a biopsy. And this is where a very small sample of your tissue will be taken and looked at under a microscope to look for any signs of disease or look at treatment effect again. And I guess I've forgotten one that's really important, which is your blood test. You probably all had one of those, but basically a small sample of your blood is taken and looked at again to check your general health and for effect.
So I'm assuming a lot of those test assessments will be carried out during your study clinic appointments. I don't really know of anyone that has a CT or MRI scan at home.
Yeah, that's correct, Brooke. All of these appointments will take place at your study clinic or a hospital. And they will be used throughout the trial period to ensure that your general health is constantly monitored. Sometimes you will actually be asked to do things at home as well. And this depends on the way your treatment's given. So if you're given an injection, you obviously will have to go to the hospital to receive that. But sometimes you'll also be given a study treatment that's actually a tablet, and obviously you will need to take that at home.
Taking your treatment is obviously a massive part of the study. One could say the key part of the study. And that might be a daunting thing for someone to do, taking a tablet at home, especially if they haven't done it before. What kind of advice do you think you could give someone?
Yeah, so taking your treatment correctly is really, really important because it has a huge impact on the results of the trial and whether the trial is actually successful and whether the researchers can actually use your information. So there are a number of things that you can do to help you remember to take the treatment if you're taking a tablet. The first one would be to take it at the same time every day if you can. Perhaps put an alarm on your phone or another device that goes off at that point when you're supposed to take it. And then it's easy to put it into your routine. Another idea is to use a pill box. It's a good reminder tool and visual aid, and it tells you exactly that you have taken that treatment and or not taken it. And it's really, really easy to use. And it's really important also if you're taking other treatments as well, you can make sure that you've taken them all at the right time. And I guess the other one is talking to your doctor as well. So if you are taking those other treatments, it may be easier for them to develop a dosing schedule with you so that you can ensure you take all the treatments at the correct time.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Always talk to your doctor, I think, is just a blanket message with clinical trials.
Absolutely.
So along with taking your medication at home, is there anything else you'll be expected to do at home? I know you mentioned questionnaires before. Is that something else that people will take home with them?
Yes, sometimes you are asked to fill in a diary. Sometimes this can be an electronic diary, or sometimes it can just be a paper-based diary. And you'll be asked to note down a number of things. So things like the time and date you took your treatment, whether you experienced any side effects, how you're actually feeling, your general health, whether anything made those side effects better or worse. And maybe sometimes it's useful to write in any questions you may have for your doctor or nurse when you next see them.
So it's a nice little place to have everything just all in one, all of your trial information.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you can add your test and appointment times as well. So it's all in one place. It's easy to find.
So that will happen during the treatment period of a clinical trial, right? So what happens when it ends? So if you have all of that rigorous testing and filling out questionnaires and things, doing stuff at home, what happens when it ends? Where does someone go after that?
Okay, so if a trial ends for any reason, you are usually asked to take part in what's called a follow-up appointment or follow-up appointments. And these are used to check your general health and just check that there's been no negative effect on your health or your well-being. And they also collect really important information on long-term effects of your condition.
So we'll jump back into follow-up appointments in a second. You mentioned when a trial ends for any reason. So does it not always end when it's supposed to? So it doesn't usually always stick to the timelines?
I guess a trial can end because the treatment isn't working. So your doctor may just decide to stop your treatment. It could be the fact that your treatment is working and they've decided to stop your trial early so that they could potentially put all participants, especially if it's randomised, onto the one that's working. It could be the fact that the number of patients that are being put on the trial has been reached. Or it could be the fact that they think it's causing you negative side effects and therefore you would stop that treatment.
I suppose it could also end, like we mentioned in a previous episode, if you just decide to...
Absolutely. If you decide you just can't do it anymore or are too tired or just don't want to leave, you can leave at any point.
And I know we kind of covered this in our previous episode, but say a trial does end when it's meant to and it was a blinded trial or a double blinded trial, then will you find out what treatment you're on, or does it depend again?
Again, it depends on the type of trial and the people that are running it, but I would say that I say maybe sometimes. Sometimes you can find out which drug you're on, but it is quite rare.
And what if the study treatment was really beneficial to you and it helped after a trial's ended? Do you get to stay on it? Is that a possibility?
It may be. I don't want to be definitive because one of the most important things is you still don't know what the risks are long term. So at that point, the scientific knowledge is just not there. So they may just say no. So usually your participation ends when the trial ends.
I suppose this links quite nicely back into follow-up appointments. And I'm assuming that's why they're there then, to monitor the long-term effects. Or can you talk to us a bit more about them?
Yeah, absolutely. So follow-up appointments are really important and they usually do involve a number of tests and procedures, but they're usually the ones that you've had during the whole trial process. So they're nothing to worry about. And they are just used to monitor the effects of the treatment on your health and just check that you're doing okay, really. And the information they collect from those follow-up appointments are really important to look at the long-term effects. So you may be asked to come to a follow-up appointment straight away, but you may also be asked to come 3 months or 6 months after the trial's ended, just so they can check on you, but also look at the long-term effects.
And by long-term effects, I think we should probably define that. Do we mean 6 months down the road or a year, maybe longer?
Maybe even longer, but usually it's 3, 6 months are your appointments for follow-up.
So trials ended, you've had your follow-up appointments. What about the results? Will you get to find out if the treatment's worked, if it's being marketed? What happens there?
This is trial specific and it really depends. Usually a trial will end. It will then take a long time for the researchers to gather all the data and analyse it carefully and work out whether the treatment's actually been beneficial or not. And if they think it has or there is benefit to reporting it, they will usually write a paper in a scientific journal.
So even if you're a patient, you'd have to go hunting in a scientific journal to find out the results of the trial that you've been on for the past however many months?
No, not necessarily. Actually, in the UK, there is a part of the NHS called the Health Regulatory Authority that publishes their results or tells you exactly where to find them on their portal.
But what about other countries?
In the EU, there is currently a guidelines that all clinical trials must be published as well on a specific portal as well.
That's really good to know. So obviously we've covered the process of being on a clinical trial, but where would someone go to actually find one?
Okay, so that is a good question. There are a number of options. I guess the first one would be to actually ask your doctor. They may be able to guide you in the right direction. Another place is to look at the web. Generally, there are a number of clinical trial websites out there that may be able to point you in the right direction. And you can usually search by condition to make it easier to find. There are also the charities of the for your disease or your condition, or patient advocacy groups. And they often have either a list of those trials, or they can, again, point you in the right direction.
And what about, it's a big scary word, but pharmaceutical companies, the big private companies, do they run any? Do they have a list of any?
Yes, again, that's a really good place to find information. They will usually list the trials that they are running in lots of different conditions. And the best plan is to talk to your doctor if you find one on that website, because sometimes it can be a little complicated.
Okie dokie. So thank you so much for all of that, Liz. I think that's about it with clinical trials.
I think so. We've covered a lot.
Yeah, thank you for being here to talk about it with me.
No problem. It's a pleasure.
Some of the concepts we've spoken about in this podcast and our previous ones are shown in lovely diagrams available on our website, cutseyandcutsey.com. So if you want a more visual way of seeing things like eligibility screening and blinded trials, please go check out the diagrams there. So thank you all for listening to this three-part podcast on clinical trials. Join us next time when we have our next topic coming up called high blood pressure. Thank you all for listening. Patient's Perspective is made by Cutsey & Cutsey, an award-winning healthcare communications agency where people matter, and based on the book series they developed with Dr. Liz Walder, Explained in Plain English. Ever since Liz was a young girl, she has been fascinated by nature and the human body, especially how things work. After gaining a degree in biology at the University of Aberystwyth, Liz went on to get a master's degree in immunology of infectious diseases from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and later a PhD from the University of Edinburgh's Medical School. Liz has over 13 years' experience working as a medical writer in numerous medical and creative agencies. In her roles, she has been responsible for interpreting high science and changing it into plain English for those who do not have her scientific background. Liz believes passionately in making science and health information accessible to everybody. She also loves innovative science and is a huge fan of CSI in-house. Liz currently heads up the content team at Cutsey & Cutsey as scientific team leader.